Good morning and welcome to our roundtable panel this morning for Tuesday, the 16th of July. I'm Joe Donahue along with WAMC's Alan Chartok. WAMC newsman Ray Graff.
Where are you going, Ray?
Oh, I'm adjusting Mike's headphone level.
Oh, all right.
You go do the show.
Okay, all right, just checking.
We're so informal here.
And Mike Spain is, I just want to make sure Ray wasn't leaving me alone. You weren't ditching.
Not with these two. No, he'll be fine. I'll protect you.
And Mike Spain is the associate editor of the Times Union and our regular here on the panel, and we love having him, and it's a delight to have you back. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
As always, for being here. So a lot of places that we can begin, but let's begin with the big national story, and that is over the filibuster. The filibuster, and ultimately Senator Harry Reid of Nevada took a defiant and uncompromising stand on Monday before a showdown on the future of the filibuster. So as it stands right now, where are we with the filibuster, Alan?
Well, we're in the soup. I'll tell you what's going on. First of all, I am always reminded of Howdy Doody's sidekick, Phil E. Buster. I don't know how many of you remember him.
Phil E. Buster.
Phil E. Buster.
There was Princess Summer, Fall, Winter, Spring.
But Phil E. Buster was always one of mine. He never shut up. So here's what we have. The Senate, which has always been the slower and more deliberative body because there is actually supposed to be more democracy there, has always been held prisoner to the fact that somebody could stand up and read the telephone book in order to stop business going. We all remember Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. That was a good example of the filibuster. However, what we have now is a whole bunch of some of the most important people who've been nominated for executive positions by the president, President Obama, just because the Republicans don't want to see those positions filled with people they don't like, they hold things up and they say they don't even have to get up and read the phone book anymore. All they do is get up and say, we're just going to filibuster. And everybody goes, oh, you can't filibuster. So Harry Reid comes along and says, we're going to have a sort of modified what they call nuclear option. We're going to say, okay, just in the case of executive nominations, there will be no filibuster. It'll just be because in order to get done, we'll have to just have 50% of the 51 senators voting on this, and there'll be no filibuster. The problem for the Democrats, and you can see them struggling on this, is that if you read Nate Silver this morning, it may well be that the Republicans take the Senate. And if that happens, and the rules have been changed by the Democrats, the Republicans are going to not only use the rule changes that they have, but probably make some others also.
I have a question.
Yes, sure.
Why can't, if the Republicans win, why can't they just immediately go and change the rules in 2015?
They can, and they will. And I think that's the whole point. Right now, everybody's always worried about the other guys coming in and changing the rules with the so-called nuclear option that we've been talking about. They don't even have to wait in 2015. They can do it whenever they want to do it if they take over the Senate. And I think that that's a very good possibility that they will. So you can just see these Democrats, Mike, in caucus. And they're saying, but if we do this, then they're going to do it. They could do it to us. And again, if you read Nate Silver in the New York Times, and he's been pretty prescient, he says it's a real toss-up as to who's going to take the Senate.
So you have a three-and-a-half-hour meeting last night between senators trying to hammer out a deal. They did not come up with one. So Harry Reid now says, okay, I'm just going to go ahead, and we're going to go ahead, and we're going to try to put through these nominations. And if we are met with opposition, then we're going to change the rules.
Change the rules. Well, you know, there's something to be said for that. There is something to be said for democracy. The real problem is not with these executive nominations. This is where the Republicans are being sort of nasty, because there's always a sort of an understanding the president can fill his executive positions with what he wants. It's the judicial nominations that really make the difference.
Well, I think some of these presidential appointments, one is Richard Cordray, the acting head of the Consumer Financial Bureau. That's the Consumer Protection Bureau. Yep. That's the one that Elizabeth Elizabeth Warren was never approved
Correct.
For. They just don't like that thing, period. They don't want anybody to head it. And,
yeah.
And then the other is some NLRB, National Labor Relations Board appointments. I mean, they're philosophically opposed to, I mean, they're pretty adamant they don't want these either. These are kind of like judges, except they're not lifetime employments like judges.
Wait a second, Mike. I'm doing this on purpose. What's your point?
Well, I'm saying that it's not simply...
we had Newhart in here for a second.
It's not only the judges. The Republicans are deeply philosophically opposed to Obama's proposed appointments to the National Liberation Board.
I mean, they just want,
but it's digging in and stopping is better. You know, no action is better than any action from their perspective. I mean, if you share their political beliefs, they're being successful. They're stopping any of this, you know, liberal NLRB appointments, and they're stopping, somebody to head the Consumer Protection Agency that is going to cause problems for banking associates that they are supported
by. The good
by.
Bankers who have led us in such a good direction in the United States up until now. I get that, you know, but I am telling, that was sarcastic for the few who will write me letters. Write me letters.
And to be clear, you don't mean every banker is corrupt, right? I mean, you know many bankers who are fine people, right?
Remember that Jack Benny? Remember the Jack Benny routine where the guy says, "Give me your life or your money."
Yeah, I'm thinking it over.
I'm thinking it over.
Right. No, so now we've referenced Howdy Doody and Jack Benny. Yes.
No, the
can Edwin be far behind? I mean, really?
No, of course I don't.
Your show of shows.
Of course,
right.
Of course I don't.
Imogene Coca.
I know
gentlemen.
Many fine bankers.
Okay, just
and
to
some
be clear.
Give their money to WMC.
That's what I thought. You know.
Okay.
Let
but the showdown is this morning, right?
Yeah, the showdown is this morning, and
there's
we'll,
something to be said for it.
And
there's
we'll
something
see what
to
happens.
Be said for it. And one last thing, Mike. I just have to fight with you about this, and that is
how do you fight with Mike?
Well, because Mike started it.
Look, he's making a
hey,
fist.
Joe,
Mike is ready.
Hey, Joe, he started it.
I think he was making. He was just bringing out.
He started. He's
trying to flesh out the conversation. I don't know that it was actually.
Well, now you've succeeded because I don't remember what I was.
Many rhetorical questions, but anyway.
Now you've succeeded, Joe, because I don't remember.
Okay.
This is really about judicial appointments, lifetime appointments to the federal bench.
So now Reid said that the filibuster in its current form would continue to apply to judicial nominations.
Correct. That's
which, unlike administration posts, are lifetime appointments.
But that doesn't mean when the Republicans take over the Senate, Joe. That's the
right.
whole point here.
Other senators have said that once the precedent of changing the rules by majority vote is established, those other forms of filibuster inevitably would be eliminated before long.
Right. Now, remember that the Congress of the United States has passed these agencies, Michael. They passed them. They made them, including the Republicans and the Democrats. So now they say, okay, you have it, but we want ineffective people to lead them who won't tick us off like Elizabeth Warren and whoever is up now. See? You get it? Ray, you look perplexed.
No. Just enjoying the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
What gets me is they asked Olympia Snowe, the former Republican senator from Maine, who was known to be a compromiser,
right,
and certainly not a right or left winger type thing. She said it's almost hard to measure the ramifications that would emanate from such an action. That's the nuclear option that you're referring to, mm-hmm. where a simple majority would be all you would need. To
God help us, we should have democracy in this country.
Once you go down that path, you cannot know how this will reverberate on the institution for generations. I mean, it sounds frightening. It sounds like nobody wants to go there, and maybe, you know, maybe it won't be so bad. Maybe democracy is not a bad thing.
Well, let's put it this way. Let me show you the judicial nominations. The Republicans, very wisely, from their perspective, not from mine, have taken over the judiciary in this country. They have a majority on the Supreme Court. Their people have gotten through under former presidents and loaded the judiciary. They won't let Obama have his judicial picks. Is that democracy? I don't think so.
And of course, the argument also has been that when it has been the Democrats in charge, that they have blocked Republican nominations.
Some. Bork.
So
we go back way back to Bork. Remember him?
I do remember him.
Yeah. And in fact, it's a verb now.
To
be borked.
Yes.
Yeah.
You're going to have to hit the 7-second delay when he says that.
Is that violating our agreement with the FCC?
Mm-hmm.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will continue with other stories, and we'll filibuster a bit. I'm sure. Yes, and coming up in the
greatest...
sounds
like Hyo Silver!
In the greatest tease in radio. Coming up, a discussion on the Lone Ranger. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.
Support for WAMC comes from Riveras, Clifton Park, New York, providing system design and implementation, server and network virtualization, IT managed services, wired and wireless network designs. Start from where you are, reverus.com. SPAC, presenting the Philadelphia Orchestra, performing the 150th anniversary race course concert with Pops conductor Keith Lockhart, featuring a composition by Daniel Poor, August 8th, sponsored by Naira, SPAC.org. Elms College, Chicopee, Massachusetts, working to educate students with their core values of faith, community, justice, and excellence. Elms.edu. And Ward's Nursery and Garden Center, Great Barrington, helping gardeners grow hardy, deer-resistant, and summer-blooming shrubs, hydrangea, and sweet pepper bush. Ward'sNursery.com.
Welcome back to our roundtable discussion. We are talking about many issues. We started off discussing the filibuster. We have other issues to talk about, and one of them, and we just have a few minutes, and I don't think it'll probably take too long to discuss this particular one. So let me go with that, and that is so David Petraeus is hired by the City University of New York,
CUNY,
to take a part-time job, and the former CIA director and commander of the Allied forces in Iraq and Afghanistan would be a visiting professor at the Macaulay Honors College at CUNY this coming academic year. This is obviously a feather in the cap for CUNY. And then it came out that he was to receive $200,000 to be a part-time professor, turning it into a minor scandal of its own, dwarfed only by the major scandal that Mr. Petraeus was part of. So it brings up the question now. CUNY has come back and said, "Well, he's only going to teach for a dollar. You're only going to have to pay him a dollar as opposed to $200,000. My interest in this story is for universities, for educational institutions, what is the power of having someone like that on your faculty? And yes, I mean, we can talk about there was who resigned in scandal, but still to have someone that, and is it worth paying them $200,000 to have them wear your, you know, wear your colors?
Well, it's important to point out he's going to give a seminar on, are we on the threshold of the North American decade? Now, David Petraeus is an interesting guy, despite his own indiscretions that cost him his CIA job. He would have an interesting perspective. That would bring a lot of interest, and it would add prestige to the Macaulay College, which is part of the CUNY system. And I think it's like getting a star player on your basketball team. You know, you get a name like that. It's like when the LA soccer team, got Beckham. You know, Beckham to be on their team.
Average salary for full-time faculty members is $89,000. Adjunct professors who currently teach more than half of CUNY's courses get just a few thousand dollars per course.
Yeah, $4,000.
Mr. Petraeus would teach one semester with 16 students and had already arranged for two graduate students to assist him, in addition to the three Harvard graduate students who would help him assemble the syllabus and grade.
Fantastic.
Not a bad deal if you can get it.
No, and a dollar is a good deal. Well, I mean, he's...
Well, the dollar is comes after the scandal. But right. The $200,000, my question is it worth it for... What does it say about CUNY and these other institutions who are ready to pay this kind of money for people to basically educate 16 students?
You know, Mike's point before is very well taken about bringing in the star and, you know, and it brings prestige. But they're not going to put a television camera, to my knowledge, into the room. So now you got 16 students sitting there in a backdrop of colleges, which private colleges, not CUNY, but private colleges, which are now costing, upward of $60,000 for many of these to send your kid to college. Where does it stop? Now, in the case of CUNY, that's taxpayer money.
I think they said a private foundation was going to cover it.
All from private funds.
But that's private funds that won't go elsewhere in the community.
My point, exactly. Yeah. But, thank you for helping with that,
Mike. But getting back to Mike's analogy about sports, it's a competitive thing. You don't think he had other offers from private schools that would have given him more money?
He could have gone to Princeton, where he graduated from.
And probably made more than $200,000.
I say let him go.
Well, if he were to give this lecture, and evidently he will, I think it's a fascinating topic, what he has to say about a possible decade of North American decade, and what that means for our future and our country and our children, et cetera.
And you make a very good point. He was up there. He knows his stuff. Because he had an affair with a hottie doesn't mean actually that that he's any different than a lot of other people in this country.
He's a disgraced former general, as opposed to a disgraced former governor.
If you're not watching this on video, which you should be, at WMC.org, Ray just took his hand and put it right up to his face and acted as
it was like a Jack Benny move. It was a reference to the earlier.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not going to repeat. Let's just move on. Your phraseology at times.
Al Gore got a lot of attention when he gave a class at Columbia, and then they clamped up and they wouldn't let anybody talk about it. They didn't let the students talk about it. I mean, it kind of wastes it on just a handful of people.
He was not a good guy. Yeah.
Well, and then there was an editorial today in the paper, which I thought did make a good point, which was, okay, so you don't pay him $200,000 to teach this course, but then you will turn around and pay him $75,000 or $100,000 to make one speech as a guest speaker.
Well, that's good.
What difference does it make?
It's good
private money. And, you know, look at it this way. Now that he's going to do it for a dollar, look at the deal. The optics are very good for CUNY. They basically have a $200,000 professor, lecturer, and they got him for free.
Well, and who knows? You know, all this stuff is always so complicated. Maybe the same guys who are going to give him the $200,000 for the course will do exactly what you just said and have him give a couple of speeches.
How much are the Harvard kids getting paid? We have many other issues to talk about, including an aquarium in the city of Albany.
Good idea.
Question mark. We will talk about that and the Lone Ranger when we return. You're listening to the Roundtable on WAMC. Welcome back to our roundtable panel for this Tuesday, the 16th of July. Alan Chartok is here, Ray Graff is here, and Mike Spain, the associate editor of the Times Union, is our special guest. We are going to talk about a very interesting issue that could affect the city of Albany. Before we do that, we do want to remind you, if you're looking for something to do this weekend, if you're looking for something fun, if you're looking for something just beautiful and exciting and perfect, no, not that, Alan. That's later. We're going to do that later.
What is it, Joe? What is the thing?
I just think it's funny that every time we start to talk about this, the first things I hear is the word dumb, da-da-dum, da-da-dum. Anyway, Natalie Merchant with the Hudson Valley Philharmonic.
Oh, in my town of Great Barrington.
Absolutely. With the Hudson Valley Philharmonic. So, you know, she's doing this she's doing this new recording. It's going to come out in the spring it's an orchestral recording. And she's doing all of these, she's doing dates with a full orchestra. And the Hudson Valley Philharmonic is going to be with her. And they're doing it at the Mahawi. So it's now she did this at Bethel, but the opportunity to see this in a nice, beautiful, intimate venue seems perfect to me.
This is the perfect theater, as you know. They spent millions of dollars putting it together, Lola Jaffe and her crew, and it really, the acoustics are wonderful.
So our dear friend Natalie Merchant will be with the Hudson Valley Philharmonic on Sunday at 7 o'clock, and you can find out information about the show by going to mahawi.org.
Our Natalie.
mahawi.org, and it sounds like a lot of fun, and there's a million things to do, and this should be at the top of your list. So mahawi.org, Natalie Merchant with the Hudson Valley Philharmonic. All right, let us talk about aquariums.
The what now?
Aquariums.
Oh, okay.
The Age of Aquarium.
Yeah.
Well, really? You're going to go for that? All right. Fine.
Hang on. Just let him go. He's moved up a couple of decades. By the end of the show, we could be right around now. Just keep going.
Well, you know, this story, Joe, goes back 15 years. In 1998, representatives from the city of Albany.
But things move quick in Albany.
Yes. Went to Chattanooga, Tennessee to look at their aquarium and a big, you know, big 3D theater. And UMax Theater, and they brought that idea back to Albany, and they've been trying to sell it. Well, it kind of died, and Albany put its hopes in a civic center to be constructed kind of east of the Empire State Plaza in a big open space that's kind of bordered by, Broadway and Madison Avenue. And they have been trying to put together a civic center plan, and everybody, maybe the mayor doesn't admit this, but just about everybody else admits
pretty kaput.
The idea is kaput, right. So with that, Omni Development Corp, which has a significant stake in downtown.
They could go to Army Hammer and ask them for some money.
Right. No, Omni has we'll get to the Army Hammer later, I guess.
Yes.
That could be regarded as a non sequitur.
keep teasing it, Mike. Go ahead.
Okay. Anyway, Omni resurrected this idea from 15 years ago to put an aquarium and a UMax theater downtown. They say
dust it off.
It would be great for school kids for all over the region. And last night, the idea got aired at a public meeting at the Albany Public Library. About 60 people were there, and there was some dissent in the audience. One of the proponents is Nancy Behrens, who's an educator at the Children's Museum of Science and Technology over in Rensselaer County. She's trying to raise $50,000, $60,000 to do a feasibility study, which sounds like a good idea. She's not necessarily in favor of the location, but she does like the idea of an aquarium as a means to educate school children in the region on oceanic occurrences. It would certainly focus on native species in the Hudson Rivers and streams around the region, and also focus on the Atlantic Ocean species. And there are people who are skeptical that it wouldn't require a lot of government funding. And there's also some opponents, like Holly Cheever, who is a animal activist and a veterinarian from Albany County, who got up to say that all it really is like a zoo for fish. It's like an animal jail, and it's a terrible life that they have to live. And she was discouraging people from supporting this and got a lot of support in the audience.
What is the proposed location?
This would be in that vacant area just east of the Empire State Plaza, east of Pearl Street. And it would have been a perfect place
right
for
on
Civic
the river?
Center. I mean, you'd
on
still have Broadway.
Yeah, no, it's almost across from SUNY Central. Yeah. Back a lot.
Okay.
But yeah.
Yes. Back by the bus station.
Yeah.
Where the old historic buildings were at one time.
Yes.
Right, and they're gone.
That we should never take it.
Yes.
And Green, now bordered by Green Street, I think.
Oh, I see. Yeah. I see.
Yeah, so
see.
There's currently... It's like Broadway and Beaver.
It could cost $50 to $100 million. I mean, that's quite a span for an estimate.
How much fish?
And it would be, it might be 40 to 100 jobs. That's also quite a span. Yep. And whether it would be self-sustaining is a question. That seems like it would be costly to maintain. And so that's what a lot of people are focusing at. It come up a little bit in the mayoral primary in Albany. You know, of course, Jerry Jennings, after 20 years, is not seeking reelection this fall. And there'll be a new mayor. And some of them support maybe investing in housing and commercial development. And maybe this is too big an idea. But it has some traction. People are talking about it.
Has the TU editorialized on this?
Well, our editorial, which was a couple weeks ago, suggested that maybe, the mayor isn't really talking about anything for the future, and maybe he should leave a legacy. Maybe he should come up with something, not necessarily this. This has some, you know, interesting components. It was a big deal in Chattanooga, Tennessee, and they don't even have an ocean there as far as I know.
Yeah.
Well, a lot of people like aquariums.
Yeah, I mean, they do draw. I mean, you know, Boston, of course, it's a big draw.
Boston, Baltimore.
Sure,
Baltimore. And they're expensive to get in, I mean, which I assume goes to the kind of keeping, you know, you're talking like 25, 30 bucks to get into to the aquarium.
But there is some money available. The state had committed maybe $60 million to help with the Civic Center. Maybe they could get some of that money to help launch this thing. And that would, you know, and they say it would spur development around it. The city needs another hotel downtown, according to some studies. They could support another downtown hotel. So, and that would help other things like at the Times Union Center, where they're trying to land the 2017 NCAA regional event, you know, and they need more hotel space. So,
and the aquarium would help as well.
Yeah.
Right.
The aquarium would generate a need for a hotel, and the hotel would
there'd be no room for it.
Other, well, I think there'd be room.
Yeah.
I don't want to get anybody mad, but I'm for this.
You're a pro aquarium.
I am.
You're just taking the stand.
I don't want to get anybody mad.
Okay.
Well, it's a big idea. You know, and sometimes you need people to think out of the
box. Nobody needs some big ideas.
So let me ask this question. So who has to say yes? I mean, so the Develop Corporation said, this is what we want to do. We want to, and then...
It's not their money.
Right. Know, so at what point, so...
I guess it has to have a ground. It has to have a groundswell of public support. And then city officials need to take the lead. And this could be Jerry Jennings' legacy, but doesn't seem like it's destined for that at this point.
Somebody another 15 years we'll be talking about this.
Probably has some sushi places around it.
Yeah.
Oh, that's nice. Alan, I see what you're saying. That's great.
It's certainly controversial. And
that's the ultimate animal jail.
Yep.
All right. Let's talk about another issue, which is perhaps could be a little more lucrative for the region, and that is, and I think this gets everyone's, you know, your ears perk up when you hear this, that Apple could be coming to the region.
Mm, that's big.
Yeah.
Yeah. Over the weekend, CNET, CNET.com, which is a very reputable high-tech website, and another one called SemiAccurate.com, which sounds
I love that.
Less reputable to me.
Well,
they got to come up with a better name. But they both follow Apple computers. You know, there's a lot of you know, secrecy about these companies. Apple doesn't even acknowledge that it has Samsung building chips for its iPhones currently in Austin, Texas. But that's allegedly what's going on in Austin.
Oh, you said chips.
Chips.
I was wondering what chips were being made in Austin, Texas.
Chips.
That's for the aquarium.
Computer semiconductor chips.
They can get the fish.
Yeah. And as we both know well, there's a brand spanking new semiconductor chip manufacturing facility just about 20 miles north of Albany in the town of Malta called Global Foundries. And U.S. Senator Charles Schumer has acknowledged that a few months ago, officials at Global Foundries approached him to see if he could help them kind of develop a relationship with Apple Computers. You know, after somewhat of a some bad publicity and a scandal over the working conditions in a Chinese factory that made Apple iPads and iPhones, Apple has been looking to move some of its manufacturing or more of its manufacturing back to the U.S. They make the glass for the iPhones and iPads in the U.S., and they make the chips in Austin, Texas, reportedly. But they're looking for a longer-term relationship, and it could be with Global Foundries that could really boost that.
Did we steal something from Austin, Texas already?
Semitech.
That moved here to the University of Albany or the new branch or the new branching off nanotechnology college.
Now, in reading this article, it seems as though the story is that we still don't know. There's but it basically, to me, what the story is Chuck Schumer saying, look, I'm trying to do this.
Well, he's been asked to facilitate, but clearly there's something going on. It's up for consideration.
What sort of facilitation can he do? Is that even the right thing for a senator to be doing?
Promoting economic development of his own state?
Why not?
Sure.
I've been urging Apple to consider developing a manufacturing and research partnership with Global Foundries.
He wants to
Schumer said Monday.
But what can he offer that wouldn't need legislation.
Well, who knows? Maybe a little money from Washington, maybe a little money from Albany.
Right, a little investment of little elbow grease.
But theoretically, he doesn't have that power as one senator to do that.
Yeah, he makes a telephone call, and all of a sudden it's there.
He's the only person speaking on the record about it. Everybody, as Joe points out, is not talking, but it sounds like there's something going on.
He invented the Shumwich.
Yes, right. Senator Schumer has the ability to be several places at the same time. You ever notice that?
He'll
have press conferences all the time.
What do they say? The most dangerous place to be is anywhere between Chuck Schumer and a microphone.
Right.
Nice.
But he's actively negotiating on behalf of our local chip manufacturing.
No, he should be doing that.
Yes,
yeah, but
should.
Shouldn't we know what the negotiations are and what he's offering up?
Well, you'd screw it all up if you
secrecy is okay at times.
At times, sure.
Okay, all right.
Well, on that note, we're going to let everyone take a breath, and we're going to take a break. We will be back in just a moment, and we're going to talk about a couple other stars, including, I believe, the Lone Ranger, if we have time. Welcome back to the roundtable for all parties involved. We are back on the air. We would like to talk about a story that is a poll that has come out of New York City with less than 2 months to go until the primary in New York. A new poll indicates that two candidates hoping to come back from scandals that sidetrack their political careers are both edging out their opponents. I think we knew this as far as the unofficial. Yeah, there were some unofficial polls, but the Quinnipiac poll came out yesterday and shows that New York Governor Eliot Spitzer, former New York Governor Eliot Spitzer, leads Manhattan Borough President Scott Stringer 48% to 33% in the Democratic primary race. Meanwhile,
turns out these are the big fish, despite the fact that every newspaper. Virtually every newspaper has beaten the hell out of them. The only columnist I know who's been supportive of Spitzer is me.
Ah.
Hmm. I know you, too. The interesting quote the interesting quote from Mickey Carroll, the director of the Quinnipiac poll, he asks rhetorically, is it better to be well-known mainly for a scandal than to be largely unknown? And I guess that these guys are getting a lot of attention. This is a national story, this Spitzer story. I mean, it's got long legs, and it's the brunt of jokes on Comedy Central and on the late
shows.
Was
long legs a joke?
The story meaning that that's just a metaphor for a story that has continued play. You know, people are following it, and it will be watched more than just in New York City because it's a big deal. I don't think anybody could really, outside of New York City, could tell you who the comptroller is and you know, what he does in New York City. But now that race is suddenly one of the biggest races on the national
on the face of the earth.
Well, at least in politics in the U.S., it gets a lot of airplay.
And projecting into the future, if these guys both win, can they get along? Those are pretty big egos.
Oh, that's a good point.
Yeah, it is.
That's a good point. You know,
what kind of administration would they be able to, you know, present?
Hobble together, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And what kind of, I mean, I think you bring up a good point of what kind of cohesion is there between these offices? You know, obviously, everyone's running, you know.
Well, the controller has to sign off on virtually everything. Same thing here. I mean, every time somebody does something, a governor does something, quite frequently, Tom DiNapoli, who we'll be talking to today in the Capital Connection, you know, has to sign. And if it's something that people don't like, he can get into trouble.
Yeah, he's elevated that role on a statewide you know, basis. It has a lot more public profile, and you know, his reports and his audits carry a lot of weight. And
they do.
With Spitzer doing that in New York City, where happens to be Wall Street and the banking industry.
Yeah, no, you can
could be very
you can
interesting.
Bet. I mean, he votes all of the the money, the pension money, and that's billions of dollars. And I'm sure what he will do when he takes over is to start to investigate some of these companies, whether they should put money into them or not.
Yeah, that'll be his sort of rationale for looking into these companies that they could possibly invest in.
And look at it this way.
Yeah.
He will, and I don't know that others will. The establishment politicians don't want Eliot Spitzer. They don't want him. They want the other guy.
Yeah, this is a liability for Democrats. Yeah.
So will there be some? Do you think there will be some togetherness if both gentlemen win the primary? Then that they will run.
Well, if they're not stupid. I mean, what will happen
is...
It can't be
a steamroller.
Yeah.
That would be a mistake, don't you think?
I think you're making a reference to the fact that state assemblyman Jim Tedesco was called by the governor, who quoted James Taylor and saying that he was some kind of a steamroller and that he was going to steamroll right over him.
Yes, a churning urn of burning funk, I believe, is the term.
Who knew?
Well done.
Well, very well done. Yeah. Yes, without without misspeaking. And
the new Godfather of Soul, ladies and gentlemen. It's Mike Spain.
Who knew?
All right, it's time. We have 5 minutes left. Let's talk about the Lone Ranger. The Lone Ranger film opened a week and a half ago. It has been called a dismal failure by most industry analysts. It is produced by the Disney Corporation. It stars Armie Hammer as the Lone Ranger, Johnny Depp as Tonto. It is a film that actually focuses probably more on Tonto.
Sure.
Than on the Lone Ranger. The film has been roundly panned. I don't think there were many good reviews of
it. Was one or two.
Yeah.
I thought it stunk. In fact, when I left, I was considering asking them if they'd give me some money for having had to watch it.
Ah.
It was terrible. But I was really insulted by it because, frankly, the Lone Ranger was my hero growing up.
Yeah.
Now, I'm of a certain age, and there may be people who don't remember that. But I do, and I saw him almost as a semi-religious figure because he had all these ethical precepts. He was a man of great dignity. He was a terrific guy. And Tonto, who was often portrayed as being that they shouldn't have had a Tonto in this. I can't tell you how many times I saw a Tonto save the Lone Ranger's hash.
In this movie?
When I was growing up in the TV.
Yeah.
And mm-hmm. before that, I hate to say this, Mike, on the radio, which was even better mm-hmm. because mm-hmm. of Mind's
before
Eye.
Before that, in person.
Was there, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I love The Lone Ranger. And what happened is they turned this movie, when all else fails, you turn a movie that isn't working into a comedy. And so, you know, it was sort of the Lone Ranger, for example, when he shoots the gun out of the guy's hand, which the Lone Ranger could do, as you remember.
Uh-huh.
But it was always, they made that into a mistake. They even made fun of Silver, the horse, the great Silver, which was all silliness. And I was frankly really turned off by the whole thing.
Yeah, I think you were. Generally, the public has agreed on Rotten Tomatoes. It scored 25 out of 100.
Yes, but none of them got my point. None of the reviews. I read the reviews. Nobody else was insulted because a great American hero had been put down.
That's probably because the people who go to movies are a lot younger and probably don't much about the Lone Ranger TV series.
No, that's right.
It was in reruns, but I think it ended in being in reruns many years ago.
Well, and let us not forget, I mean, every once in a while, the Hollywood decides that they're going to bring back a franchise for a new generation. They did it for our generation in 1980 with The Lone Ranger. Does anybody remember the name Clinton Spilsbury?
No, he was the guy?
No. Clinton, well, yes,
he was the Lone Ranger.
I
actually went to that.
I never saw that.
At the Copaic Movie Theater, which then burned down. And I can tell you right now that I love the film.
Well, now,
everybody else hated it.
Everyone else hated it. Clinton Spilsbury was never to work in Hollywood again.
Wow.
He has one film credit to his name, and he never worked again.
What year was that?
1981.
Do you
think possibly his agent said, look, babe, lose the name Spilsbury.
If they put that out on...
No, he went into the flower business, actually.
Yes.
If they put that on Netflix, I bet that would go through the ether. That would probably be so popular right now.
I bet
that's
it's on
right.
Netflix.
Yeah,
right?
You never know.
But they had the horse. They had. Does anybody remember Rossini's first name, who wrote, the William Tell Overture, which is otherwise known as the Lone Ranger music?
I remember the William Tell Overture.
You don't remember Rossini's first name?
Jimmy?
Yeah.
I think Jimmy Rossini.
Gio Scani or something like that. Yeah, Giovanni.
So you don't remember either?
Not quite.
All right. Well, the show's over.
Giacchino Rossini.
Oh, is that
Giacchino
what?
Rossini.
Giacchino.
And of course, this version stars Armie Hammer, who is not my favorite actor.
Okay.
What has he been? He was terrible. He sounded like George Bush.
He was in. He played both the Winklevoss twins in.
Interesting.
In Social Network.
The Social Network.
Right. And he was in that horrible J. Edgar Hoover movie.
Oh.
Is he really the grandson of Armie Hammer?
Yes.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So, with that, Alan has given you his review of The Lone Ranger. We always welcome your reviews. Roundtable at WAMC.org, roundtable at WAMC.org. You can also comment on our webpage or Facebook page or tweet us at WAMC Roundtable. Maybe I shouldn't have reminded people they could do that today. Anyway.
Burn the tapes.
We'll be back tomorrow, won't we? You're listening to... thank you all for being here.
And what about Mike? Happy
Mike,
to be here.
Always
hey,
good
Mike.
To see you, and we'll see you next week, I assume.
Oh, great.
Yes,
great.
Excellent.
That's not a commitment,
no,
by the way.
No.
He's like, okay, so long.
Gotta go.
A fiery horse in the speed of light.
You're listening to The Roundtable at WAMC.